So, you know, I like listening to Candace Owens, right? I think she's really smart and she really gets things. I like the way she thinks through stuff. I may not necessarily agree with everything she has to say, and I think she does definitely have her own biases. I guess like we all do, but it comes out from time to time, but I do like listening to her. Do you think you've warmed up to her since you've known me and you've been forced to listen to her when we're in the car together?
Well, I must admit, yet I was surprised that she was so clear-minded on many subjects and very courageous, in my opinion, to address some of those.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
she doesn't mince her words. I don't think she addresses the whole issues she could address. She has limits because probably of the media she's operating on.
Yeah,
But
I agree.
it's possible that she's blinded to some aspects of the questions. It's like a Black Lives Matter documentary. Didn't address anything beyond the owners of the Black Lives Matter organization.
I know, that was
And
interesting.
it was very interesting to me that is it because she doesn't want to investigate further these front people, or is it because she just self-censored her documentary, which I would understand.
Yeah, I agree. She could have done a bit of a deeper dive, and she could have gone to the people behind the actual front people of the Black Lives Matter, because you know that the money came from a source for the agenda, which she pointed out very well what the agenda was, and I really appreciated her investigative journalism expertise. She's great in that, but she didn't go far enough.
Yes, and someone who is operating within the media and knows the media knows perfectly you can take any organization in the world today. You can take a donkey, basically, and if the donkey has the support of the media, the donkey gets elected president. Okay? So if Black Lives Matter had so much support on their demonstrations everywhere worldwide, it's because there was a strong support by the owners of the media.
And
And they are
huge
not the
money.
owners of Black Lives Matter's organization. So
Exactly. There was huge money behind that BLM movement, and what she uncovered really does leave us with food for thought. It really does make us think about what was that all about, because we knew it was about everything but Black Lives Mattering, based on just some of the achievements that they attained through
yes,
their existence.
there's so much digging that needs to be done. There is a former secretary, undersecretary of housing under former Bush senior administration, Catherine Austin Fitts, that pointed out that all the demonstrations that were violently producing fires in some cities in the US, the empty streets, were all earmarked for redevelopment. And the
Interesting.
material to destroy these streets and these stores, the stones, etc., were pre-positioned.
I saw that. I
Yeah.
saw that in another documentary, that wherever the BLM protests were, but that's interesting. What you've told me is new, though, that they were already earmarked for destruction and for renovation. So they kind of
Exactly.
needed to be destroyed
Yeah, it's a way to drive the price down, to buy it back for pennies to the
conveniently.
dollar and redevelop according to plans that were predetermined.
Unbelievable. So, we're living in a world, especially I think more so today than in the previous generations, where we just really do have to question everything. It's sad that that is the reality, but it's definitely what I've observed over these last couple of years. So, I was listening to one of her episodes earlier, I think yesterday, and she was talking about Qatar, and I thought she raised some interesting points. And she starts with talking about the horseshoe theory, which basically charts the similarities between the right and the left. And she feels that sometimes, obviously, those lines can blur easily and overlap, even when there's like a common sort of nationalistic agenda. And when it comes to their so-called American values, she really does ask those tough questions. So she mentions that both sides have a problem with countries that implement Sharia law, and she says the West can be pretty hypocritical because of some of the laws that they impose or some of those human rights that they oversee. First of all, I take exception to the fact that Sharia law is something that we should sort of condemn, or we should put on an equally sort of platformed attack as we do those that have hypocritical laws and ideologies. So off the bat, I think just attacking Sharia law in general is problematic.
Yeah, I think people are mixing two things: the Sharia law, so the principles, and the implementation of the principles, and let's say the corruption very often of the judicial system. And because the judicial system is broken, they attack the law.
Right.
So the law in general, the Sharia, was developed according to principles that you try to interpret and to implement according to certain conditions. And many of the effort of implementing these principles were done by wonderful people in a certain historical context. And it's possible that today the solutions they proposed that were valid in their context would not be implemented the same way today.
Right.
But since we have lost a unifying factor, which is the Khalifa, there's no more authority that can just say, okay, this is the way it is. Right.
Would you say that Sharia law has adapted itself well over time?
I don't think so.
Because of the people that are imposing it.
Yes, there is this idea that probably along the Mongol invasions of the Middle East in the 13th century, the gates, the Orientalists, and many Muslims are, you know, taking this idea. The doors of the Ijtihad were closed, meaning that all the potential of the Sharia was expressed, and now was the time to close all these interpretation doors.
So up any committees that would want to take an aspect of Sharia to implement it for that time. They wanted to close those doors on that. Wow.
When all the thinkers and even the founders of the four schools of law, they all said, well, according to our knowledge of the Quran, of the Hadith, and, you know, of the Sunnah, this is the solution we come up with. But don't follow me if you don't agree with me. Meaning that they never said that they had divine knowledge about this Sharia solution would be eternally true forever. It is their understanding in that moment. And they were very powerful people intellectually.
And they use the tools at their means, the religious tools, the scriptures, the hadith.
Yes, the simple example that we can give in the Middle Age, if you are in a city, in the Khorasan or in Baghdad, the principle of Sharia is that women should be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get out of the house, they shouldn't be in harm's way.
Right.
All right? So in a context where crime is everywhere, rape, stealing, attacks, as it was the case, there was no security out of the house.
Yeah.
Then these people said, okay, Sharia means, implementation of correct Sharia means that a woman should never leave her house except if she's accompanied by her husband or a brother or a member of a family.
Right.
Right?
Which changes the original intention of that.
No, the intention is the intention is to protect people.
Yeah.
The implementation of this principle of protection is this, and it's correct.
Yes.
But now in a city where law and order exists,
and security,
it becomes an oppression.
Yes.
Because now the woman cannot just go out at 11 a.m. where there's absolutely no risk of being attacked. But she cannot do it without her father or brother, and this becomes an oppression.
Right.
So,
Would you agree that there are some Gulf states that do implement Sharia in a fair and balanced way? I lived in Dubai, as you know, for years and years, and I think they had a pretty good respect for the Islamic adherence to day-to-day life. I wouldn't say it was perfect, oh my gosh, by any means. And yes, there were probably a lot of problematic issues. Yes. But what would you think about today's implementation?
Yeah. I mean, for everyday life, probably, I would agree. The problem with Sharia and its implementation today is the partial implementation. So, you know, if you implement part of the law, the law can become unjust. It's like inheritance.
Yeah.
The brother inherits, for example, more than the sister.
Right.
But in exchange, he has to take care of his sister.
Sure.
And if he forgets this duty,
right,
his excess inheritance becomes a prejudice. It becomes something that is... So when governments implement, you know, some of the Sharia, but then the system of money is still corrupt, this corruption creates havoc in the whole system.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's true that in the 50s, when Sharia law was implemented in Saudi Arabia, for example, and they started to implement very harsh treatment of a thief. Theft diminished radically.
Right.
And from a country where you could be attacked and even murdered very often, and the pilgrims, etc., the crime rate almost went to zero. So as an ordinary citizen, you want that,
Yeah,
right?
sure.
Except Sharia is not reduced to our everyday life. The
Yeah.
whole system that needs to be complete and honestly implemented with checks and balances.
And it requires the people to also adhere to it in a very
Yes,
honest manner.
and to be themselves submitted to it.
Yeah. Well, and so it comes back to developing our belief in God and in God's law and what is the correct way to adhere to God's mandates. So
Yes, and to make the difference really between principles and recipes. Principles are the ones that are given by Allah in His book, and they give us a framework of directions of things that are not negotiable, but how to implement them in any and every situation, this is up for debate. It is, I mean, Allah has given us a brain, He has given us leaders, and they need Allah's light.
It's interesting because Candace, in this particular episode, highlights the quote unquote atrocities of Qatar that people are talking about. And really, she kind of rolls her eyes about this too, because she says, you know, for example, you can't drink alcohol, was one of the rules that Qatar had. But my take was, it's kind of like what you said, you can't just implement a part of the law, you kind of have to go all the way. My take was they are letting people have alcohol free flowing in the VIP boxes, and you know they had fan zones where there was alcohol.
And in
So
their private homes.
right, so if you know if you're going to do this no alcohol rule, then you have to be true to that rule. You can't just say it's kind of there on a partial basis because then it doesn't work because you're still going to have a lot of related problems. But she was saying, listen, you know, why are you guys knocking their you can't drink alcohol stance? Meanwhile, all sorts of substance abuse is happening at with the, you know, record family devastation as a result of, you know, how we approach substances in the West. And she made a very good point. She said the government doesn't do anything about that. So, you know, how can we be pointing fingers at other countries that are taking a different approach? She was talking about, you know, that people are complaining that, you know, that even adultery is illegal in Qatar. It's a punishable crime. And she said, meanwhile, we have dating apps in the West that are undergoing overhauls because married people are getting onto these dating apps just so that they can cheat on their spouse. And then they also want to like stay woke, quote unquote, you know, progressive by legitimizing polyamorous relationships, which in and of itself is so troubling because it leads to a whole string of you know instability in the household and you know the West she says likes to celebrate sex and this can be a very serious illness. So she made some really good and profound points. And you know, so she, you know, she says while she doesn't agree with, you know, a lot of the laws in Qatar, and I didn't know this was a law, but she alleges that a raped person can also go to jail. But in the West, she said, by the same token, you can f point fingers at anyone, like in the Me Too movement, where men can just be accused and their whole lives can be devastated. So there's, you know, so th there was that was an interesting. Sort of debate she had about, you know, Qatar versus our laws, meaning the West. And she says in Qatar, they have policies against social media practices. You can get in serious trouble for spreading false news. And I know just by living in Dubai, even if you were gossiping and backbiting, you can actually get in trouble with the law for doing something like that on social media. So she says in America, they censor you if you go against their narrative. So even if you post something positive, that's truth, but goes against sort of like the narrative that the government wants to push on you or the agenda wants to push on you, you can get in trouble. So she said, really, how much better are we?
Well, in the West, there was a trial in Germany on for a person who had used language to describe a forbidden question, and in the tribunal, the judge said, "Truth is no defense."
Oh, wow.
So when we reach such let's say relativistic views,
Yeah.
when we are constantly virtue signaling, everything is just about showing. An appearance, an ideal, And in the West, this constant, let's say, emphasis on interpersonal relations, sexual things, I think it just shows that people are bored.
Well, it's there's also some sort of a perverse movement that just obviously hasn't seen its boundaries. You know, they seem to have no boundaries, and that's what's really concerning. And I think she really aptly points out, which would you say is worse, Qatar or America, based on what you already know? And that's a valid point.
Yeah, I think none of those are in a position to give lessons to the other.
Yeah. And you know, especially recently, in today's news, I saw that the whole Germany team at FIFA in Qatar, you know, covered their mouths for their photo op because they wanted to let everybody know that they're being silenced because they can't wear their armband supporting, you know, LGBT. And that to me is really interesting because in Qatar, as we know, there is no such thing as same-sex relationships. It's against their law, and it's against the religion. It's against Islam. So gay marriage is not recognized, and you can be sentenced to prison for having a same-sex relationship. But in America, she says, we are mutilating children by allowing gender surgeries and further devastating them with hormone blockers and whatnot. So she says, they say that it's love that they are helping to, you know, help children to recognize their real genders and what they feel inside of them, affirming terror, as she calls it. And she says, again, I have to ask you, which is worse? Which society is worse in the end when you have such problems going on? I think it boils down to respecting the culture and the beliefs of the country that you've agreed to step into. You know, they expect women to not wear to be covered so much, you know, whether it's a hijab ban or whatever, say in France. So by that same token, why wouldn't they be expected to remove their LGBT armbands whilst they're in a country that doesn't recognize such stuff?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, people declare that they are in love with diversity, but each time they see something different than what they think is right, they are just becoming the most intolerant people that you can imagine. I mean, as the prophet said, if you are in a foreign country, just act as the people, and unless it goes strictly against the truth. But
Right.
a custom, a habit, or a cultural habits, yeah, they are not set in stone. There is place for diversity. If you don't like, let's say, the banning of homosexuality, or at least the public expression of homosexuality, because I remind you that in Islam, homosexuality is not forbidden. It is the expression and the practice of homosexuality. Okay, this.
Right, so you have to go against yourself when you have such
Yes.
urges that go against God's mandate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. This life is about a trial. It's a constant questioning. Do you prefer this or the truth?
Right.
And people can be born with certain tendencies. Some people are greedy.
And they have to
Some people
struggle
are
against
jealous.
it. Yeah.
Yes. And their question is, do you prefer your greed, your
Yeah.
jealousy,
Yeah.
or your instinct?
Yeah.
Do you prefer this or do you prefer the truth? And if you prefer the truth, you have to find ways to deal with it. And many people have. And I personally know people who have chosen, even if they were inclined to go in a certain way sexually, to go and have a family, and they are very happy.
Right. I mean, that's you make a very good point. People can have violent tendencies. I mean, if we allow everyone to sort of, you know, act on their urges, then we would have chaos. So there was a reason why the scriptures, I mean, from the beginning of time, you know, all scriptures had banned it, and Islam, you know, being sort of like a scripture, you know, the Quran being a scripture that has not been tampered with, has maintained its authenticity, and so there has to be an adherence to God's law, and so you have to respect a country that does that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So she sarcastically says, how, you know, unimaginable that some people are refused. You know, for example, the German team was refused that they can wear their armband. She mentioned the American journalist Grant Wall was refused entry into Qatar to cover the game because he was wearing a rainbow football on his t-shirt. So he tweeted, just now, security guard refusing to let me into the stadium for USA versus Wales. And he quoted, you have to change your shirt. It's not allowed. That's what the guard told him. So she sarcastically says, you know, how unimaginable to be refused entry somewhere based on what you're wearing. And then she goes, oh, wait, she says, it is imaginable because this society, the West, said that kids can't go to school if they don't mask up, or you can't go to a football game without a mask. I think she didn't go far enough because she fails to mention that, you know, some Western countries don't allow you to go to school if you wear a hijab, you know, and they're discriminated against if you're wearing, a full bathing suit, the Islamic bathing suit on their beach. So there are a lot of discriminations in the West and they expect you to adhere to it. So she shared another tweet from the journalist during an earlier time where he's wearing a mask and he exclaims something to the effect that, you know, you must wear a mask if you are to leave your home. So you know, she's summarizing the notion of hypocrisy between these two circumstances. And I really wonder at what point there will be a wake-up call where they'll say, okay, we expect them to adhere to our ways, you know, should there not be a movement for us to really respect theirs when we're in their regions?
Well, do you feel there will be an awakening?
I mean, it's kind of a good sign that this discussion is taking place in different platforms. I think a lot of people are discussing it and people are able to have that debate. I think for the first time, social media has eased up on their, you know, cancel and shut them up, you know, stance where they would just
delete. One of them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Twitter has really sort of made that promise that, you know, they're going to let people discuss things like this more freely, because the old Twitter, pre-Elon, would censor you and would shut you down if you said anything against the narrative. Now you can say, I'm not comfortable with my child being encouraged to question their gender when they're at an age where things are so confusing as it is to grow up and just be a decent human being. So I need to call out my, you know, kid's school or the school board or the government. And I suppose now you can say that on Twitter and you can have a healthy discussion with respect and not offending anyone, but at the same time taking your stance.
Well, I'm afraid that any discussion that is meaningful in a world where people are driven by feelings and not by facts, because apparently facts have no bearing on many people, you will always offend someone.
Yeah.
Okay.
True.
So if being offended is the driver, no discussion is possible. This is why people are shut down.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm very in favor myself of freedom of speech, as long as it doesn't go beyond, I mean, the constraints of the law.
Right.
And when you say certain things, you will offend people. They shouldn't be.
Right.
Because if they feel that you're wrong, they should just feel you're wrong or see you're wrong. And why would me being wrong be offending?
Yeah.
Right? So there's something fishy going there. They are trying to use feelings as a way to prove something. And I'm sorry, a feeling doesn't prove anything.
That's been a strategy for a while. They slap this, oh, you're racist or you're anti this or you're anti that on people very quickly to shut them up. Or, of course, the favorite is you're a conspiracy theorist, right? Like if you think Black Lives Matter has some really funny business going on, then, you know, you're the one that ends up being on the stand and being questioned rather than the person that you've actually called out for something.
Yes, but this is the mentality of habits. Every time a group belief system has been challenged, it can be in science, it can be in culture, every time it has been challenged, it has been pushed back very furiously by people holding power.
Yeah.
You know, and this free stage, first it's mocked, then it's fought, and then it's accepted as evident.
Yeah.
We always knew that, I mean, you know. So yeah, it's a natural psychological reaction. Now we are supposed to have reached a point where we could have civil discussions, very open. And if someone tells me I don't like black people, let these people say that. Because sometimes they have good reasons, because they had bad experience. Or they saw movies or things like this, you know?
It could be a way to prevent them from sort of like, you know, attacking a whole sort of race.
No, yeah, and they would do it. It's unjust.
Yeah.
It's unfair.
Yeah.
But If the discussion is not opened, and I think you showed me a clip of, I mean, the former holder of this comedy, the late show, the late night show, is James Stewart.
John Stewart,
John Stewart, who said recently he came out in light of this supposedly anti-Semitic comments by Kanye, or Ye, Ye, Kanye West, and he said really. When people attack Jews now, it's not the time that we just use this anti-Semitic slander again and again to
The label, yeah.
shut the conversation. It's time that we Jews, we just allow the conversation to go
Yeah.
and to examine and to open this wound,
Yeah.
because a wound that is not open to be cleaned will get infected.
Yeah, and at some point you have to question, when does it become political rather than a humanitarian thing? To call somebody anti anything, at what point is it about human rights and at what point is it about a political agenda? So we need to keep ourselves in check when everyone, when people are saying things, we need to be able to question and also question ourselves and sort of bring some sanity back into the system.
Yeah, I agree. We all operate on ideas,
Yeah.
and some of these ideas are probably not reflecting of the real world. So we need always to be in a position to be able to discuss openly, to try to put in check the feelings and the passion, and always be ready to be wrong,
Yeah.
and to accept to correct a view. This is the only way to progress.
Well, let's see. I think there's so much, so many sort of offshoot topics that have come out of this. So, let's reflect on that and talk soon.